Come on, guys, we've got a really, really great speaker for you. And for those of you on Zoom, man, we miss you guys. We're excited for you to be back the next time. We're having a great time here in Houston, and it's a great new venue. The only thing that's missing is you. So make sure next time you guys can come. So our next speaker spent most of the day yesterday with us in the leadership group. Everybody, I want you to know that the next speaker that you guys have the privilege of working with, it's not the first time at the Inner Circle. In fact, the first time he came to the Inner Circle was virtually, and I was so impressed, and I thought, man, we have really got to do something with this Get in the Game. In fact, we loved it so much that we put a game in action almost immediately after the last conference, and I'm just going to tell you now, it made a tremendous difference. We have several members of our staff here, so if you want to know how the game went at TMC, you can go ahead and ask any of our team members. But right now, I'd like you to go ahead and stand up, because we're going to bring our ROV, rate of vibration, and we need somebody in the back, somebody in the way back, maybe our camera person. We want to make sure that Steve gets to go home and share a standing ovation picture with his wife. So we're gonna go ahead and set it up right here. So when I tell you, we're going to give Steve our round of applause. Our photographer is getting into position now. And Steve Baker, you are going to have a heck of a standing O right now. You're welcome. In fact, have you seen the movie Ford versus Ferrari? Let me channel my inner Matt Damon.
You're welcome.
Let's give Mr. Steve Baker an incredible Inner Circle round of applause, please. Woo!
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. That's all I have for you. Have a great conference. Oh, gosh.
Thank you.
Boy, I hope we did get that one, because, see, when I get home Friday night about 10, Joanne will say, the laundry's in that room. So it's like, you know, you're not all that is kind of what I get when I get home. It is really great to be here. Where are the folks who were in leadership meeting yesterday? Yeah? All right. Can I have a power clap? 1, 2, 3. Yeah. You should have been there. So what I would like to do is, what we want to do is expose you to the idea of the great game of business, what it is, where it came from, what it means, and then we'll show you some examples of the principles and practices in motion. Tomorrow, we will literally walk through the 10 steps of implementing the great game of business in my new book, Get in the Game, which is the how-to from Jack Stack's original 1992 book, The Great Game of Business. So today, some of you folks from the leadership group will hear the story of SRC, maybe a little bit deeper, but we'll go into those principles and practices to give you a deeper understanding. So as we head toward this idea of mastery, this is another level of depth. Now, I'm going to tell you, it is very interesting to me to meet so many different entrepreneurs, business people. You're changing lives. You are the backbone of the economy. Correct? Who creates the jobs in the United States? You guys do, right? Who creates the wealth that can be shared with our teams? You guys do. And this is really important to us because I work for a company called SRC, the Springfield Remanufacturing Corporation. We remanufacture engines and engine components. I'm going to tell you our history here in a moment. That sounds super sexy, right? The only company that I've met that sounds sexier is the, where is Scott from Utah, Logan, Utah? Where are you, Scott? You're somewhere in here. He relines sewer pipes and such. Doesn't that sound sexier than turning a wrench? So I just want to say it's so great to meet all of you guys. You're finding ways to create something where there was nothing, or something that was so humble or plain or simple, and you're making it exciting, and you're making it possible for people to believe that there's something bigger for their lives. And that's through business. It's not through some magical powder or some incredible spell. It is simply getting to work and creating something where there was nothing before. So I applaud you all. Now, are you ready to have fun? Oh, that is nice. Now, the people that were with me yesterday, did those 4 hours that I spoke, did those go fast? So we have 90 minutes. It's going to go really fast, right? And you guys know I burn through PowerPoint slides. I met somebody from Ann Arbor yesterday. That's you, right? So Ari Weinswig is a friend of mine, longtime open book practitioner. I'm telling you, this guy starts everything out with every presentation. He goes, I don't use PowerPoint because if you do, you have no power and you have no point. And so I get up there right after Ari with like 500 slides, and I'm going, man, this is like a crutch for me. So good news is they're mostly pictures, so it's okay, folks. So if you're really ready to have fun, let me hear it. Woo! All right. So to really have fun, you should always start out with what I would call a pretty depressing story. So who has seen the movie The Life of Pi? Okay, here's the interesting thing, right? When you saw it, was it not the most visually stunning movie you have ever seen in your life? I mean, it's really stunning. For those of you who haven't seen it, you need to watch it. It's a great story, for one, but the movie itself was groundbreaking. In fact, the company that created these effects, Rhythm and Hughes in Los Angeles, California, had already won an Academy Award for Babe, and one for the Golden Compass. And they were on their track to win their third Academy Award for Best Visual Effects for Life of Pi. Man, this movie is astounding. And the funny thing is, there's really nothing real in the movie except the boy and the boat. Look at this thing. This is their soundstage. Even the main character, remember, Richard Parker. Was that offensive? Okay, I'm just making sure I'm reading my audience correctly here. Not real. Every hair on that tiger's head, body, tail, all generated by special effects, by computer-generated graphics. They had to invent new software. They had to build new hardware just to make this thing possible. Do you get how difficult this is? And so these guys, Rhythm and Hughes, envy of the industry, best in the world at visual effects, right? And they had the Oscars to prove it. And they were waiting for their third. And during heavy production, guess what? They were also the envy of the industry, and they got all the best talent because you want to bring your dog to work? You got it. You want to wear jeans, shorts, flip-flops? You got it. Hey, free bagels in the morning. Lunches are served, and during busy times, dinners right there. Cadillac healthcare program, including LASIK eye surgery. Because who wants a visual effects artist that cannot see shit? Does it sound like a great place to work? Man, best place to work, best people in the world. And here they are accepting their third Academy Award for Best Visual Effects in a Motion Picture. Pretty cool, right? This photo was taken 13 days after they filed Chapter 11 and fired all 254 people. And that's all I have for you. No. Oh, it's a terrible story, and yet here's the whole message behind what I'm talking about. Can you be the best in the world and still lose everything? I want to hear it. I want you to really feel it. Can you be the best in the world and still lose everything? Now, I see a real range of people here. I see a real range of ages and backgrounds, right? What I want to know, folks, is who here has been laid off or lost a job when you don't think you deserved it? Okay, good for you. I'm telling you, the audiences are getting younger and younger. It seems like no one knows what inflation is. Nobody knows what a recession is. My own children don't know what a recession is. They don't remember it. My oldest is 28. He doesn't remember it because guess what we did? We protected him from it. My youngest is 20. So that's all I have to say. Here's the thing. Man, I'm telling you. We need to remind people that this stuff happens every day, not just in America, but around the world. People lose their livelihoods without ever having a say in it whatsoever. And that is our story. So SRC was the smallest division of International Harvester. I want to take you in the Wayback Machine. Go back to the 1970s, late 70s, early 80s. Anybody remember that time? The Carter years? The Great Malaise? Anyone remember this? For all my young bros back here, can I say bros? Is that cool? We had a little chat yesterday. We started to have a chat, and we got interrupted by a middle-aged white guy. I don't understand what happened, but it happened, so I owe you guys, right? Here's the thing, man. This International Harvester Company started in 1902, one of the strongest multinational corporations in the world, run by command and control, right? Do your job, nothing more, nothing less. Punch the clock. We didn't hire you for your big ideas. What's good for International is good for America. But by the time the late 70s came around, there were some things going on. First of all, International was fighting a six-month-long strike. 12% inflation, 17% unemployment, and Japan was coming in with twice the quality for half the price. They were not responding to global competition. They were losing $57,000 an hour. How's that feel? I actually think I heard a little pucker noise in this room. What do you do when you're losing $57,000 an hour?
Make it up on volume.
Make it up on volume. Yeah. Keep digging.
Call your coach.
Call your coach, absolutely. But do you think command and control people call coaches? Mm-mm. What do you think you have to do? You're losing $60,000 an hour, basically. What do? Somebody talk to me. Layoffs. You got to cut. Stop the bleeding. Would you say change? Oh, they're not going to change. They're not going to change. What's good for International is good for America. We're the guys that invented business. We are the Industrial Revolution. And for those of you, I've met a few of you who live in the Midwest, you see the derelict plants from the iron rust belt of industry, right? This is the Industrial Revolution, and here comes the Reaper to come get you. When you don't respond to global competition, you got all these problems, you're not changing. What you're doing is you're saying, I got to cut fast, I got to cut deep. They closed down entire towns. They went on a layoff spree of 1,000 people a week for 2 years. Imagine 100,000 families losing their livelihood because their employer couldn't change, couldn't adapt, couldn't overcome. So a lot of people were getting the pink slip, not understanding why, well, we were doing great. And SRC, at that time called the Springfield Renew Center, was charged with remanufacturing all of those broken down, dirty diesel engines that failed in the farm fields and out in the construction sites and on the highways of America. They remanufactured. There's a difference between rebuilding and remanufacturing, you see. Remanufacturing is way different. It's manufacturing over again. Rebuilding is you tear the thing down to the point of failure, and then you build it back up. Remanufacturing, you tear it completely apart. For those of you old enough, you might remember Greg Brady of the Brady Bunch disassembling a convertible in his driveway. You remember, don't you? Can you sing the song? Hey, everybody. No, that's the Partridge Family. So what I'm getting at here is, you know, this is tough. And they had to be the best in the world, right? They work in thousands of an inch tolerance. Can you say thousandths with me? That's a lot. They have to make sure it's perfect because one tiny mistake could be catastrophic engine failure. I mean, they were the best in the world. Best quality, best warranty rate, best safety record, best on-time delivery, best customer service. Any kind of a competition that International would run, SRC would win. And they couldn't understand why on earth they were going to get laid off. Because they could see it coming. Because they'd close Peoria, they'd close Moline, they'd close all these factories in these towns. And people are like, what do I do with these skills? And in Springfield, Missouri, if you were one of the 119 people that worked there at SRC, you're going, well, where am I going to work? Basically, a lot of people were working there to save the family farm anyway. So, check this out. Melrose Park, this is headquarters. Chicago, Illinois, Jack Stack, our founder and CEO, is a 29-year-old manager. He's got three kids in diapers, if I'm remembering correctly, and a $200 a month mortgage. He's asked to go to Springfield, Missouri to shut down the factory, and he says, I don't know if I want to do that. Two reasons. One is, it looks pretty bad on a resume. Hey, what'd you do? You're a young guy, young executive. Oh, I shut down a factory. Great job. And the other one is, as I told the group yesterday, he's Irish Catholic. So he's 80% guilt, 20% alcohol. Jack, Jack says, I can't take this. And one of the things that we uncovered yesterday, folks, in the leadership group, because the leadership group kept coming up with it. I think, Sherry, you were talking about it. Man, why on earth do we, as leaders, have to take the God-like questions? Should I get married? Should I have a baby? Should I take on a 7-year car loan? No, that's not a question for us as managers and leaders and owners of businesses. That's a question that they should have the knowledge and resources to answer. And Jack couldn't take it. It's like, look, the economic reality is, he really pulled everybody together physically into the plant and said, the economic reality is we are going to be closed or sold or just simply vaporized. Shut down. That's it. The jobs are gone. Because I don't want to do that. I'm watching you guys. And in the Ozarks, much like all around America, you find these groups of people who are really good at what they do. And they are great technicians. And they roll up their sleeves and say, give me the tools and get the hell out of my way. I will fix the problem. I will figure it out. I will solve it. And Jack says, I think we can make a run at it. So who here would like to make a run at buying the business? International wants $9 million for the factory. And guess what? People are like, well, that sounds great. Let's do it. Let's save the jobs. Well, how much are you going to put in? Because just like buying a truck, you got to put something down. So he literally, now I was on a trip with him not long ago, and I like to get a couple of Miller Lights in him because the details become richer. And I'm telling you, what's cool is he goes, you know, Mr. Baker, that's what he calls me. I feel like I'm in the principal's office. Here's a yellow legal pad, crisp, yellow, bright, clean. He starts handing it around. And remember, this is a garage shop in Springfield, Missouri. They recreate engines. The pad goes around and says, just put down whatever you think you can put into the kitty. You know, you'll get it back as we turn the business around, that sort of thing. It goes all the way around the factory. Now it comes back dog-eared, torn, black thumbprints from the grease. You know, that's how the work was being done. And there's $60,000 total. And Jack's like, wait, they want $9 million. This is not good enough. Let's do this. You guys take the weekend. Just take it home. Talk to your in-laws, your friends, your family, your neighbors, anybody, and see what you can do. So you see what he's trying to do. He's trying to get more buy-in. He's trying to get more people involved. And Monday morning, they do it again. Start with a clean pad. It goes around the room, and now it has $40,000 on it. Because who wants to get into that deal, right? $9 million against this? It's not going to work, right? So the thing was, everybody was really great at their technical job. Nobody really understood money. And so Jack and 12 other managers scraped together $100,000. That's all they could do. And they started going to banks and saying, hey, we are the best in the world at remanufacturing. Look at my certificates of quality, my awards for best warranty rate, right? All the metrics he was given by International for his whole career. He started in the mailroom, worked his way up to a plant manager, and now he's going to banks and saying, I want to save 119 jobs. What do you think? And what do you think the bank said? When are you going to pay us back? And Jack's like, wow, really good question. He's there to save jobs. The bank is there to make money, collect interest, right? If they're going to take on this risk, they got to make money. So Jack started learning lessons about business he didn't plan on learning. He thought he could go there and be awesome, and they would give him money. I mean, that's the way it works in movies, isn't it? And we all know that business is just like in the movies. Exactly like that. So what do? Well, he starts learning, and this is what happened. So there's Jack, by the way. This is what they called second shift back in the old days. It was held at a bar called Joanne's Expressway Inn, right down from the factory. There's Jack. He's looks like a young Kennedy, you know. Just look how young he is. He's a child, and he's got all these families counting on him. He's like, I can't take this pressure. But he went for it. He went to 54 different banks. Took him over a year and a half to learn enough about the banking language, about the financials, the secret language of business. He goes, wait a minute, you're telling me there's one universal language of business and we didn't teach our kids, we didn't teach our employees? This is what separates the haves and the have-nots. And Jack's mission has always been to give the have-nots what the haves have. It's not a redistribution of wealth, it's a redistribution of knowledge. Right? What if they could understand the secret language? What would happen? Because every time he went to another bank and they said, Where's your cash flow statement? What's that? He had to go learn about it. Where's your business plan? I better go learn about it. And each time he got a little better and a little better, and he did learn their language. So well, in fact, that after about a year, he starts reading the Wall Street Journal. Now he starts to understand the ratios. He goes, wait a minute, we are looking at the wrong scorecard. Because the scorecard that he was given his whole life, his whole career, was on the metrics. The KPIs, the measures of success based on, you don't need to worry about the financials, we'll take care of that. You take care of these numbers, everything else will take care of itself. Did it? Well, it did, because they closed all the factories, right? Just wasn't a positive outcome. And Jack says, I don't want that for anybody. What I've got to do is figure out a way to teach everybody in this factory how business works, how money is generated, how cash can be created, right? We've got to teach our people. And so as he's reading these articles, he starts to go, wait a minute, I've got a terrible loan, right? He's got $100,000 to put down against $9 million. That's a debt ratio of 89 to 1. It's the worst corporate buyout offer in American history, and he is a young guy with a $200 a month mortgage going, man, if I've got a terrible loan, I need a terrible bank. Let it sink in. It's funny. So he found one. He goes, I'm looking for a bank that will take on incredible risks so they can charge incredible interest rates. And he did it. He booked the worst corporate buyout in American history. He went to Bank of America and said, I hear you're booking bad loans. I have got a doozy for you. $8.9 million against $100,000 down at the deal rate of 18%. Yesterday he had a $200 a month mortgage. Today he has $130,000 of interest expense due in 28 days. Hoo-wee. That's a lot of pressure. I thought I had pressure before. And this is when he said, I've got to get my people involved. And so the first lesson, the first financial literacy lesson he taught them was debt to equity. It's almost caveman simple, isn't it? Debt bad, equity good. And the first scorecard they had, picture a time clock. For those of you that are too young, a time clock is a thing on the wall where you would go and take a card and you would punch it and it would make a time code on your card, and that's how you got paid. And everybody had to touch it twice a day, maybe more if they were clocking in and out for breaks. So the thing was, on one side, he could pay $8.9 million, over here $100,000, and he could say, let's move $1 from here to here. That's another dollar of security, another day of survival. Debt to equity equals job security, because that's what everybody wanted to know. Will I have a job? Will I get a check? Will it cash? So, sounds pretty simple, doesn't it? What do you think our people did? Best people in the world at what they do. I tell you what, you worry about debt to equity, give me the tools, get the hell out of my way. So he had to teach people business. How do you do that? It's like, do I fool them into it? He said, that seems manipulative. What if we made a game of it? We're all competitive. We're naturally competitive. We're a game-playing nation. He said, what if we could do that? What if we could get people focused on something completely different and say, you know what, guys? It isn't the stuff we make. It's not the engines and the turbos and the fuel systems. It's not the stuff we make. It's not the services we provide. The company is our product. And I think you need to take that home. It isn't the stuff you do. It isn't the services you provide. I do not care if you turn a wrench or write code. The company is actually the product. That is where wealth is generated. That is where job security comes from. If everybody's focused on creating a great company, all else will be done, right? You can say, well, we based everything in our company around customer service. If you're building a great company, won't you have to have great customer service? Great quality, on-time delivery, right? So Jack figured out one thing that would move a lot of other things. And as he began to teach it, he goes, we need an accelerated learning process. So let's build an education program around building a great company. And then let's build an accountability program because we need to hold one another accountable in order to make this work. And finally, what's in it for me? An incentive plan. And so, if the company's the product, why don't you tie your education program, your accountability program, and your incentive program to building a great company? This is making sense. If you're tracking with me, let me hear one of Howard's amens. Okay, I like it. So this is what we're trying to do, right? Build a business of business people who think and act and feel more like owners do. That's the big idea, because don't owners think differently than employees do? Now, let's be clear. We are a 100% employee-owned company. We've got 2,000 people, $680 million in sales. I'm the smallest of the businesses. All we do is teach this stuff. We help other companies do what SRC has done. But to be clear, I'm not talking about sharing equity right now. Maybe that's in your future. I think it's awesome. But when I talk about ownership, what am I talking about? I'm talking about here and here, right? You can tell when people own their work, correct? And if they don't own it, whose fault is it? I think it's our fault as leaders. We need to be able to give them the resources and the training and the teaching and the inspiration, don't we? To say, oh, now I know what we're doing. Who went on the tour this morning? Yeah, guys, did we see engagement and ownership? What I loved the most wasn't even the fact that you had, was it Johan that led our group? Am I saying that correctly? Santi, you led the other group. Ours was better. What I'm getting at is it was awesome to see. My favorite part, though, wasn't the people in the office, because I knew they were going to be stellar. I knew it. I just, even before I got there, I was thinking they're going to be phenomenal. I don't think they would live in this world. What I love is seeing the people on the shop floor, and they owned that thing. Did that place not look like a laboratory? Like they should have had white coats on or something, and maybe some sterile gloves and a clean room or something? It was awesome. That's ownership. So when we talk about it, don't get hung up on, you want me to sell my company to my employees? Hey, sure, someday if you want to. That's not the point of what I'm saying. Ownership. Think and act like an owner does. That's learning business. That's the secret language. And it's the secret to great business. So if this is the strategy to get to a great company, then what I really want to talk about, and Christina, if you could hit that for me, what we've got next is, okay, how do we make this happen? We're building a business of business people who think and act and feel like owners do. We've got to kind of get into that mindset of how do you build an ownership culture. So if you're building an ownership culture, there we go, thank you. You got two problems. We do not speak the same language, and we do not aim at the same goals. Would you agree with that? Do you ever feel like you're a little bit separated from where your people are headed? Give me an example, anybody. You want me to give you an example? When was the last time you went? Recently? Yeah, okay, that's the example. Whatever they said, and you're like going, you don't get any of this, but you didn't say it because you're nice, and you're trying to be a good leader. And so then you're like going, how do I help them get there with me? This is the whole concept, correct? And the goals, of course, how many of your people, now when we went over there today, I not only saw the disc profile of everybody on their cubicle, I also saw a scorecard in the training room that told me specifically, like I'm brand new. I don't know anything about carpet cleaning because you should see my freaking carpets. But I can tell you, if that was my first day, I could figure out the bonus program pretty darn quick. How many of you would say that your people, right down to the person that you hired last week, understand the goals of the business? Raise your hands high if you're proud of it. Look around the room, because this is what you need to know. Hey, this is normal, by the way, and good for you that they do. The rest of you, I want you to just take this in and say, what if? What if we slowed down to speed up? What if we actually stopped for a second and said, what are we going for here, guys, and how do we get there? Do you think we might just be able to connect a few more people to our critical number, the one thing that will help us get to becoming a great company? Do you think that with a little more knowledge, a little more training, a little more action toward them, if we invest in that, will we get it back? Let me hear you then, because most of you didn't raise your hands. Yeah. Better? Okay, so let's talk about it. What keeps up your employees at night? Paying their bills, life problems. Hey, college. You could say anything, couldn't you? Car broke down, braces, tuition, taxes, job security, all the research. Even today, 8.3 million people unemployed, 10 million jobs open in the United States. The math doesn't work. But all the research still says the people who want to work, they want to know, will I have a job? Will I get a check? Will it cash? And as soon as that's settled, when do I get a raise? How do I get more benefits? Do I get time off? I want all of those things too. I'm a great employee, but I'm also a guy who thinks like an owner. So I want to say this. What if you said, where does all this come from? Let's just stick with job security for a second. Where does job security live and breathe? Talk to me. Sales pipeline, providing a great value, cash flow, competence. How many of these things go into your daily conversations with your employees? Do they? Good. How about everybody else? Right? It's probably not like, you know, you take cash flow home with you every night, don't you? I don't mean like bags of money, because that's what they think you do. I'm talking about the burden of cash flow, and you're, why do I have to carry this? And all of their families, and all of their kids, and I want to give you some freedom. What if I gave you the most freeing leadership development program on the planet, teaching people business? What if they thought and acted and felt a little bit more like you? Not tomorrow, but maybe a little bit tomorrow. And maybe not next week, but maybe a little bit next week, and you build on it and you build on it. Because what if job security comes from a growing, profitable, sustainable business? Why aren't we teaching them the meaning of that? Because that's what keeps you guys up at night, right? Cash flow, competition, material costs, labor costs, blah, 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 taxes, regulation. We are in the internal combustion engine business. We could literally be regulated out of business tomorrow. Have to switch to batteries, that's right. And don't you think our engineers are working on the sustainable stuff too? And I'm using that in quotes because we have no lithium in the United States. How's your Chinese? That's what I should ask. Now, here's the deal, guys. Thank you. I'm here all week. Thank you. You got to catch them fast because they're flying fast. So if in fact, all the things employees want come from what owners think about, why don't we start teaching them that? That's the big idea behind the great game of business. And that's what Jack was trying to do, is say you don't get to just turn a wrench anymore. You don't just get to be an engineer anymore. You don't just get to be a salesperson anymore. You did that, you did it great, and you almost lost everything. Pretty big, right? So if we can get employees to think and act and feel more like owners, then we need to do this. If we're not understanding the same goal of creating a great company, and we're not speaking the same language, what is the language of business? Money. And how do we track, measure, and report money? Numbers. Yes, the financial statements. And they've been around forever. Here's the man, Luca Pacioli. You guys heard this yesterday, right? The father of modern accounting. He's like the George Clooney of Venice. No, that's not true. He's a Venetian friar, a Franciscan friar even, who in 1494 popularized the income statement, the balance sheet as we know them today. They have not changed in over 500 years. Do you teach your children this? I didn't. Do you think I do now? As best I can, and as much as they can take in. And man, do we teach our employees. The thing is, they're universal. Yesterday I learned something that I think was really cool. Can you guys read this? You can? You are smarty pants. So I've been going around in front of tens of thousands of people for the last couple of years showing this thing and going, I finally found a balance sheet that I could say, I honestly have no idea what it says because it's in Chinese. What I didn't find out until yesterday was it's from Taiwan. They're different. It is Chinese. Traditional Chinese is what I'm told. It's Taiwanese. Here's the thing. I can't read it, but I can see that it balances. These things are 500 years old. They cross all boundaries, political, geographical, emotional, economic, everything. It's the one universal we all share, and yet it is held in captivity by people called controllers and accountants. Are you with me? You know who you are. Here's the thing, man. Oh, my gosh. Do we have to all become accountants to understand the financial statements? No, we don't. In fact, I don't want to impose that on anyone. We have accountants for a reason, because they're awesome at what they do. Let them do what they do. But here's the thing. Look how happy he is about it. This is where Jack comes in with his big idea, right? He goes, I want to teach people business, but they keep pushing back on me, right? I need an analogy that everyone can understand and everyone can use and everyone can get behind. And so he used the analogy of a game. The first problem he had to get over is, give me the tools and get the hell out of my way. Great technicians will resist learning about business because they go, but, that's not what I am good at. Let the bean counters count the beans. I will do the thing. And I'll tell you, I don't care if you're an actuary or if you are writing the code for the next satellite to go into space or if you're cleaning carpets. What I want to know is, do they understand the economics of their own business and what they do every day makes a difference in your financial outcomes? Instead of just dumbing it down to some KPIs that completely divorce from your people who are creating the numbers in your business from the financial outcomes of their actions. It's a big deal, right? And so the second thing is, he goes, wait a minute. We're naturally competitive. We love to play games. We're a game-playing nation. We can do this. Why don't we just make it a game? Because business has all the same elements that a game does. So what I'm trying to get at for you here, folks, is there's a common goal. It's a team goal. We're going to win or lose as a team, and we ain't going to lose. There are rules in business, right? Lots of rules. There are definitely scorecards. Those are the financial statements. When I do this, that means I've given you the answer, and you're supposed to give it back to me with applause and admiration. Yeah, okay, no, don't do that. That seems disingenuous, but let's keep going. And a reward for winning or a risk of losing. I mean, that's, you know, if you're going to think and act and feel like an owner, one of the feelings of an owner is there's a risk. But what we'd like to do is not dump that on them right now. What I want to do is say, what can we do? Because we're much more likely to get there together. So if you're tracking with me, these are the principles of the game, right? At the center is the critical number. How do we build that great company? What's in our way? In the early days, it was $8.9 million of debt. Now, yesterday, we played with it for quite a while, didn't we? I said, what was the big critical number? I'm just going to jump to it for you all. What do you think it might be if we're trying to build that business of business people and the company's the product and all this stuff, and right in the middle of it is this thing that's in our way of being a great company? Well, what if, in fact, you said, what is that? So this is an exercise that we played with a little bit yesterday. I want to try it right now with your permission. And I always start by saying, do you guys trust me yet? Kinda. Okay, I'll go with kinda. I have lived a life of rejection, so that's actually a welcoming in. Okay, here's what I want you to do. Now, those of you who played yesterday, just play along. The exercise works, and it's something you can do with your people Monday morning when you get back if you choose to say, what's our one thing? And you want to drive home the big point. So are you ready for this? Are you ready for this?
Yes.
All right. All right. I want you to close your eyes. By the way, there will be no touching. Close your eyes. Let's take a deep breath together. Just relax. Get real grounded. I want you to do one thing and one thing only. I want you to point your right index finger. I want you to point north. And now open your eyes and look around the room. Do it now. Go. You're really not into this. Sorry. Here's the thing. Let's just look around. How many different ways are we pointing right now? Are we likely to get near our goal whatsoever? So where is north, my Houstonians? Okay, that, guess what you're getting for Christmas? A Garmin, because that ain't north. So, so it's that way? So now everybody, straight arm this time, really like straight arm. Everybody point. Now look around the room. Is this a powerful feeling? Can we get there now? What if we actually painted a picture for people of where we're going? Where do I begin? What's our one thing? And we usually say a critical number, that one thing. It's not for all time. It's for a year. What if we said, we've got some stuff to deal with, and we, you know, Jack, I'm telling you, man, Jack Stack, this guy is competitive, and he is smart, and he's also filled with the belief someone's going to eat his lunch. And I think we all are to some degree, because that's sort of, he calls it creative paranoia. He's always looking at the markets, he's looking at the marketplace, he's looking at the industry, the economy, he's looking at world events. By the way, check this out. 2 weeks ago, I was in Houston on the north end at Lake Conroe for a conference. Gave a speech, and I met a guy who did aluminum extrusions. And they make, they use it in windows and architectural doors. I mean, high-end stuff. And I said, hey, buddy, how about that coup in Guinea last week? Did you guys read about this? So Wall Street Journal, like page 3, coup in Guinea, aluminum prices to soar, because Guinea has the largest bauxite deposits on the planet. This is where we get aluminum from. I knew about it. The aluminum guy didn't know about it and was stunned to hear that there were going to be increase in his raw material. Now, I'm not dissing him. You understand that, right? I'm going, no, at SRC companies, out of 2,000 people, 10 different factories, our people know the price of copper, they watch the price of steel, everything they're working at because they're thinking like business people. Now, isn't that interesting? Why do I know it? Because what I've learned from Jack is, if you think and act and feel like an owner, part of that is understanding the marketplace. I don't need to know about aluminum, but because I'm reading things that business people read, suddenly I'm exposed to a much bigger picture. Is this making any sense at all? Did I just sound like a know-it-all? Because I think that guy thought I did, because I knew something in his industry he didn't know. And I didn't mean to come across that way. It was more like I wanted to go, hey, tell me about it. Because all I know is I read this, and I'm going, I never thought a political conflict halfway around the world would make a difference in what we pay for soda because it comes in cans. Are you following me? Everything's connected. How do we get our people to get connected to the stuff that they're connected to most? So, what's your one thing? It's right at the center of your business. In those early days of SRC, $8.9 million against $100,000 down is pretty horrendous. Financially speaking, you're brain dead, you're flatlining, you don't even know you're dead. That's how dead you are. Jack says that Bank of America had liquidation trailers idling in the parking lot, waiting to take the machinery away because they knew at that level of debt they were going to fail. Imagine the feeling of knowing they were just waiting another week, another month, another quarter. Sure, they're going to fail sometime, and these guys kept going. And the one thing Jack figured out, remember I said you want one thing to move a lot of other things, make the bank note payment. So, good quality, of course. We can't lose a customer. We can't make a $10,000 mistake. Great customer service, absolutely. We've got to get paid on time. Great accounting, yeah, the invoices have to be perfect so they don't get sidelined. You know, every conversation that he could have with every department in the business had to do with how can you touch this critical number making the bank loan payment? Are you getting the point? Because if I asked you, you'd say cash, you'd say all the right stuff, right? Sales, production, all those things are correct. He needed one thing. Because if you tell people 20 things, if you give your people 20 KPIs, you know what they really hear? Yes, he saw Charlie Brown cartoons when he was younger, right? You know what I'm talking about. You've seen him, wah, 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 Steve, wah, 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 right? You say three things, you said nothing. So what if it was one thing we were working on, and every week we had a weekly huddle where we actually built an income statement together around this idea of, oh, we could actually make this work. It gives people hope, and people need hope, but it also gives people reality, and you aren't carrying all the burden yourself. So let's just look at that and say, if you knew what your critical number was, and up in the left-hand corner, you've got know and teach the rules. You're going to teach people. That's where the open book part comes in. We're going to be transparent about the numbers, but it's not giving you the numbers. We're asking you to tell us what numbers you think will be happening based on everything we know. I'll show you a video of this in a little bit. I'm going to teach them the game they're in. The next one, to the right, follow the action and keep score. Every single week, we will build an income statement together saying, can we make this thing work? Forecasting the end of the month. When you get good at it, forecasting the end of the quarter. Pretty soon people are forecasting like never before. We'll show you examples of that too. And finally, what the heck is in it for us? In the early days, you get to keep your job. soon as we figured that out, it was, maybe we can get some raises, maybe some bonuses. Maybe we can have a dream of making this thing last where people could work literally now for 40 years at SRC. That's crazy. Save jobs, create wealth, share the wealth with those who created it. That's Jack's Jawbreaker, I call it. Like, you remember Jawbreakers? I'm really aging myself. Wait till you get to the movie references. It's going to be crazy. So imagine, look, let's zoom out on this guy a little bit. If this is the game, if this is the element of any game, this whole thing right here, this graphic, the team win is in the center. I want to go to every single department that I have, and I want to have a conversation. This is what we're after. What information do you need? What information can you give us? What data, right? I want to know how to connect every department. But then departments are made up of people. So let's just use an example of, here's a department with teams in it, and each team has some people in it. If you were to blow this out as an example, you know, think about it. Your departments are going to be the same departments everybody else in this room has. I've got sales, I've got marketing, I've got admin, I've got operations, right? Department. Just go to your people and say, hey, what I want is that guy on the far right-hand corner who thinks he's completely disconnected. A lot of you have dispersed workforces. And I bet you're going to challenge me and say, well, I don't know how we're going to have a huddle every week when my people are in trucks out on the job. Steve, I know my business, right? And I'm going to go, yeah, you do. I know. But you know what's happening on the job site at any given moment without being a tyrannical freak. I guess we have a few in here. No, I'm kidding. Here's the thing. I don't want you to be. What if they managed themselves because they knew the goals of the business and they spoke your language? What if the guy, I'm from the Ozarks, so when I say guy, it's gender free, okay? Is that cool with everybody? So I want that guy out there on the fringes of the organization to go, I understand what I need to do every single day to move the numbers in the right direction because I want to help my team, and I want my team to help my department. I want my department to see that critical number through. So I have what we call line of sight. If you are a surveyor, you need line of sight, an unobstructed view to a target, right? You used to see the guys, now they do it with lasers, but you see the guy on the side of the road with a stick, right? When I was like six, I remember that's the job I want, the stick guy. And then the other guy got to peer through the transom and they would make the measurements, all done with lasers. Here's a better one, more contemporary. If you're a sniper, line of sight is an unobstructed view to your target. I see that got more response than surveyors, so we'll go with death. So if we walk through these quickly, I want to give you the principles and practices. We didn't get to go into these yesterday, but we're going to do that now. And I want to give you examples of each one so you can understand how it applies in real life with different kinds of organizations. The first is know and teach the rules. I'm telling you, I will meet people every single day of my professional life who say, oh, yeah, we're open book, meaning that every quarter they get up at a podium and they get their people together and they go, well, last quarter sucked, we didn't make bonus, and hey, work harder, okay, I'll see you next quarter, right? That's open book reporting at best. What I really want you to do is flip the funnel on that and say, what if you were asking your people to forecast, which we'll look at next, but here's the thing, transparency worthless without education. You can be as transparent as you want. It will suck. It will backfire on you if you're not educating people because they don't know what it means yet. They didn't get taught in school, and chances are most of their financial literacy has been from TV, internet, movies, and profit is evil, business is bad, and you are a four-letter word because you're a capitalist. And that sounds rough. But the thing is, baby, I'm telling you, when you start to empower them and give them the secret language, in fact, teach it like I teach it. Tell them it's a secret language. Have them go into a bank empowered. Have them go to a car dealership and say, no, I will not take your 7-year indentured servitude. I'm going to buy this through my credit union or whatever. You see what I'm saying? I want people to be empowered. I want them to be smarter. I want them to make their own godlike decisions. I will have a baby, I will take on a mortgage, I won't do this, I won't do... You see what I'm saying? I'm telling you, and here's the magic part of this. Financial education works. This is when I will share with you my background. I have a degree in art. And now I write books, I speak, and I coach and teach business ladies and gentlemen, that is America. If I can learn it, every single one of your employees can learn it, because I bet they're smarter than me. So here's the thing. If you give them the keys to the kingdom, what are they going to do with it? Let's talk about what really happens with real human beings when you teach them business. Now, you'll also see the critical number there. We use a high involvement planning process. That's for later. That's the higher level of mastery when you get good at the basics. Imagine, we just had our meetings 3 weeks ago in Springfield, Missouri. Twice a year, we get all of our sales and marketing groups together. They create the plan by asking people, what does the market look like? And then they go into our factories and our businesses, and we say, hey, what do you think could happen if we can sell this much? What does operations look like? What building do we need? You get my point? Sounds crazy, doesn't it? And then we have the gall to stand up in front of our own people and say, what is your confidence level, 0 to 10, in our sales plan and our contingency plan? Meaning, if the sales plan blows up, what are we working on, sales of products and services that we could bring forward quickly? And you know what is crazy is, think about it, 2,000 people, most of them have their name on their shirt in Springfield, Missouri. We do it twice a year. We're bringing the marketplace to our people, and guys like me have to stand up in front of them and our peers, the other 10 or another 9 companies, and our board of directors and say, hey, you guys all make engines and engine components. I don't know squat about that, but I'm here to teach you about a training and consulting company that we run called The Great Game of Business. And here's our plan, here's our marketplace, here's our competition, and I have to sell them to see if they will invest in me. And I now present also, here's what my employees think, what do you guys think? Can you imagine that many votes, literally, on paper, where people tell you your plan sucks? If you don't get an 85 or above, you have to redo it. Because what am I really looking for in high involvement planning? A critical number that people believe in. Because if they don't believe, they won't buy in. Say buy in for me. Buy in. That's what we all want, because if people don't buy in, they won't commit. If they don't commit, they will not execute. So you can do all of your fancy, blah, 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 we're awesome, and really impress them with your style and your presentation, but until they buy in, they will not execute in the field the way they will if they believe it, they commit to it. So let's take a look at what this looks like. I live in Greene County, Missouri. Most of my work for the last 16 years has been on the road somewhere else. Because, you know, a prophet is not known in his own land or something like that. Somebody help me who's more biblically literate. Is that close? Okay. So you got to be from at least 50 miles away and carry a briefcase. That's what I heard. So anyway, my own county was within 3 years of bankruptcy. And they called us up and they said, we need help. I'm going, this is my community, you know, and my team gets together and we go, you know what, this is our community, we're doing it, we're going to help. Why they hadn't asked for the previous 30 some odd years, we have no clue. Probably because it didn't matter. Because anyone who meets Jack Stack goes, oh yeah, I know Jack, oh, we're open book, you know, and on we go. Here's the thing, they said, what can we do? People at Greene County, Missouri had not had a raise in 6 years. What do you think morale was like in Greene County? Hoo-wee! Who here has not had a raise in 6 years? It would feel terrible, would it not? Yeah, I knew, boss man, I knew it. You deserve a raise. Give him a raise, please. There you go. See how easy that is? Here's the deal. So we started hearing stories. They held the huddles in the rotunda of the county courthouse. It was the craziest thing you ever saw, and they kept it up every week. They were talking about, what can we do different? What can we do different? What can we do different? And I tell you, it took a while to get people on board, because they're going, I didn't get a raise for 6 years, and now you want me to learn financials? Are you nuts? Give me the tools, get the hell out of my way. It was basically it. I'll just keep going until it falls down. You know, they won't let the county fall down. You know, this is the sort of thinking that we heard. But then we started to see the tide turn. People are getting more involved. They're thinking. They're making an impact, and they're seeing it in the financials. The drum of chemicals you see up here, that was from a janitor who told his story. I'm sorry, a maintenance worker, because he's way more than a janitor. Had worked at the county for more than 20 years, and he came up to the county commissioner, because the county commissioner told me this story. He said, Dr. Bench, I just want to tell you how this is impacting me. I worked here for over 20 years. I clean and maintain these county buildings. And for the first time in those 20 years, I looked at the instructions on the barrel, and it says dilute 7 to 1. First year, he saved him $7,000. But if you add, multiply that by 20 years, he didn't do it. But man, we have some freaky clean buildings in Greene County. So here's the thing. Within a year, not only were they getting smarter, they were getting more engaged. They cared for each other better. We were hearing weird behavioral stuff happen. And then they got raises. How do you think morale is today? The weirdest thing here is I was talking to the county auditor. Now, these are people you don't ever want to talk to, right? I'm talking to the county auditor, Cindy Stein, an elected position. She could make way more money as a CPA out in the real world, right? But she's committed to the community. She tells me that the Greene County Sheriff's Department needs to expand their detention center. I thought it was a jail. It's not, because what I didn't know is she says they're trying to make it the best place where people can live until they go to trial. Have you ever heard anyone talk about prisoners as people living somewhere? The point is, innocent until proven guilty. And the people, the jailers, the detention officers, actually were involved in the design of the building. They came in under budget, before schedule. I mean, it's crazy, isn't it? It's like they were totally engaged around the project. And I'm going, if I could be disengaged, it would be at the sewer plant or at the jail. And that's just such a great, inspiring story to me, because these are folks who are not making the most money in the world, right? They have a tremendous benefits package, but they were on the brink of disaster, and they went and took it. And who made the difference? Was it the county commissioner? Was it the county auditor? Was it anyone like? No, they just showed the leadership. So understanding how you make a financial impact, by the way, in the state of Missouri, it is unconstitutional to pay a bonus. And as a taxpayer, I'm glad. But I do want them to get raises. I do want them to have great benefits. I want them to have everything else that they can, because I want good service. I don't want to run out. I do not want a bankrupt county cutting back on sheriff's deputies. I do not want fire protection drawn back because they don't have the funds. You get my point? So what's the next one? Follow the action and keep score. Now, this is where we actually bring it to life. Accountability lives and breathes in our weekly huddle. Every week, we have a short meeting just around the financials. It's not a production meeting. It's not a HR meeting or anything else. It is about the financials. We get in and we get out. It's like church. It's the same time every week. We hold it sacred, and I'm not being sacrilegious. I'm saying everybody knows you got to be there. If you don't believe me, ask my boss, Rich Armstrong. Because that, it's a couple of years ago now, but there was a point where, look, I'm an important guy. I'm flying around the country, you know, talking about great game and everything. I'm going to be on a flight. I won't be in the huddle. And then the next week, hey, I'm going to be on another flight, or I'm speaking then, or this or that. Rich finally sits me down in the office. He goes, you know, as a leader, what message are you sending to everyone in the company? What message was I sending? I'm more important than the huddle. And I said, oh, my gosh, you're totally right. Because I was. I was like going, I don't need to be there. I already know the numbers anyway, man. Yeah. Or I could look at it on my phone or what. All the excuses that you guys can come up with to not have a weekly huddle, I had in my head at that moment, and they all flushed out. I'm going, you're right. I'm not modeling the behavior. I'm not being an example of what we're trying to do here. So imagine, though, it's not just going over the numbers. The people responsible for the numbers, the line item owners, they're the ones bringing the numbers to life. Would you like to see a video of a real live huddle? So this is from Tasty Catering in Chicago, Illinois. They started out as a client and became actually one of the owners. There are three brothers that own it. And Kevin Walter is now our top coach worldwide and still part owner in his brother's companies. But I want to show you, this is before he became a coach, what his company looks like. Now, to preface it, here's 1-800-GOT-JUNK. A quick stand-up huddle, boom, 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 through the numbers. Here's a company called Silvacom in Canada. They write the code, the software that runs satellites in space. Same kind of huddle. They're looking at the same financial statements. They're building the same income statement. And here's Venturity. This is right in Dallas. Accounting firm. They help people like you, small to mid-sized businesses who say, I need an outsourced accounting department. Guess what? My favorite quote is from them. Chris McKee, the CEO, he says, we needed you guys to come in and teach us how to run a business. They're an accounting firm. They go, what we had is a group of accountants. They're awesome at their job. They will do your taxes. They will run your books, but they really didn't understand how to run a business. Are you getting it? If we can even teach accountants something, there's something to be learned here. So here is the huddle. Watch out for these things. Who's running the huddle? Where are the numbers coming from? What does it all add up to? What should we be worried about, right? All the things that you can get done in a very short time are covered in this huddle. Check it out.
$80,000. We are currently at $72,000 as of this morning, and that does not include a event that Ellen has for $19,000 in just coffee sales.
One, two, three. Coffee supplies.
We are going to come down and going down to $2,300.
We're coming down to $1,200.
I think it's a great number. In a round of class, in a three class, and one big class.
Okay, a question here. Let's see if anybody can figure this out. How did this stay the same with sales growth and this stay the same? Is there an issue there? Tim, with the logistics labor, $25,800 out of $325,000.
Stayed the same.
Awesome. Excellent answer.
So just an update for Set on our mini game where we're trying to give Tony clothes. He has, we've already done three out of our five of our categories. Benny visits, we just need a few more, but our big push that our team is trying to do is hit those calls.
If there's one thing everybody can take away today, is let's all focus on trying to do whatever we can to land more sales.
All right, what'd you see? A lot of people? Camaraderie? Engagement? Do you think they knew that there was a film crew in the room? Interaction? Yeah, of course they did. So there may be just a little bit more perkiness, a little bit, maybe they got their hair done, who knows? But I do know this. I have been to Tasty Catering's huddle, and I have been to huddles all over the world. Yes.
The notebooks.
That caught my eye.
Everybody was taking writing down everything, you know, they were recording everything. Every position had a notebook. That was pretty cool.
If you couldn't hear him, he said the notebooks. And I'm going to paraphrase a little bit. As they were writing down the numbers, as different people were calling out their numbers, people were writing them down and doing math at work? Outrageous! When you do math, when you write something down, it gets ingrained into your brain, right? And it's not hard math. We're talking literally addition and subtraction, are we not? So here's the thing. I'm glad you picked it up. At SRC companies, what we're really great at is scoreboards. But over the last few years, gigantic wall-sized monitors have become very cheap. And so what do? Well, we put up a monitor on every wall we possibly can. In our factories, there's monitors at almost every workstation these days, so that they can put numbers into the ERP and do this and that, right? All the stuff they need to do for their job. But what's the problem if you have your financials up on a big screen and then you go, you know what else we should do? We've got that celebration to do, and we've got a safety reminder, and we've got this, and we've got that, and we got this, and we got that. Where did the financials go? They may be flashing, but I'm telling you there's something. Google it. Object permanence. You got it when you were like a few weeks old. Puppies get it when they're a few weeks old. But there's a point where a newborn does not know that mommy just disappeared. Peekaboo, terrifying, right? Object permanence is, I know there's a ball, but my owner has it behind their back, right? Financials, especially just simplified income statement, is best on paper. Sure, show it on a screen, keep it up there, but man, if you have it posted literally on the wall, it makes a difference. So at SRC, what we're doing is we're putting them back on the wall. Yes, we still have the big screens, but I'm telling you, if you have the scoreboards where they live and breathe and eat, they tend to live with the numbers even better. Did you see who were providing the numbers? The employees, the people that own the line items, team leads, department heads. The salespeople are reporting on sales. That seems normal, but is it normal for someone to talk about how much coffee is going to go out? And aren't you surprised at how much coffee costs? I mean, it's like, oh my gosh, I want to be in the catering business. So, anything else? Who ran the huddle?
The energy.
Yeah, absolutely. Energy. It's right. It's one place we can get together. And guess what we're doing? We're building hope. We're building the power of the business by saying, here's the thing. Let me throw this at you all. Is it possible that could have been a different week and they go, oh, we lost a huge contract? Or March 15th of 2020, the governor just shut down Illinois. What do you think that huddle was like? I think I heard that pucker noise again. Not funny? No, it's funny. Trust me. I'm telling you, man, everything's shut down. What are we going to do? And the story I told about Tasty Catering yesterday, you could see some of the drivers in there. When they got shut down, they're going, what are we going to do? The first thing that Kevin and his brothers did is they took fear out of the room. They said, what's your biggest fear? And literally, people said, toilet paper. I'm not kidding. And then it was food. And then they're like, oh my God, what about jobs? Because the first assumption was, they're going to take care of us. Even though they're financially literate and they're learning the great game of business at that point, are you getting the drift here? The assumption was, I'm going to be taken care of. That's what a child thinks. I really want to hand people their adult card and say, how are we going to get through this together? So the first thing that Kevin did, he said, we're taking fear out of the room. First of all, we have a warehouse full of paper goods. We're going to break the massive cases of toilet paper up, and you guys can buy them at cost. Hey, we've got coolers, walk-ins full of food. You can buy it at cost, right? Not that they couldn't have anyway. That's how they treat their people. They would let them do that. But it was the idea. We have food. We have toilet paper. That's fine. Now what are we going to do about the business? And what do drivers do that used to run catering around Chicago? Well, they had to brainstorm it. And they went through a lot. But to get to the crux of the story is, one of them says, what if we get in our trucks and we drive around and we look for full parking lots? And Kevin and Larry and Tom are going, I'm sure there's something there, but I don't know what it is. What do you mean? He goes, those would be essential businesses. They're still working. They still have to eat, and all the restaurants around them are closed. Plus, all of our competitors, there are 9 major caterers in Chicago. I'm talking, this is a big business, right? 8 of them shut down completely, laid everybody off. So who did you see driving around Chicago, and who would you think of if you did want to get contact-free meals delivered to your place? Tasty Catering, because they're driving around in their big Sprinter vans with Tasty Catering all over them. They're alive and vibrant, right? They also gathered the intelligence to say, who do our salespeople go call on? They also had to get Chef Alfredo, the guy who led the huddle. He's their executive chef. He pulls together a task force, and they start creating a menu they never had before. Contactless meals packaged in a way that everybody could go, oh, they know what they're doing about COVID. Did anyone know? No. But they sure had authority, didn't they? Kind of freaky, isn't it? It's cool. And where did it come from? From the floor. I mean, when I say the floor, I mean your frontline people. Is this making sense? All right, so let's talk about it. We just talked about financial education. And we talked about the huddle and forecasting, right? All those numbers you saw there were in the future. And when people say to you, well, what do you want me to do? I'm not a fortune teller. Do I have a magic crystal ball? And then this is what you say. Are you ready for it? When they say, I cannot predict the future, here's what you say. Your job is not to predict the future. Your job is to influence it. Your job is not to predict the future. Your job is to influence it. Who knows the job better than the person doing the job? I don't know. You might say it's you, right? That's probably what I would have said historically until you find out somebody's doing it every day and they've already figured out some stuff. They just didn't have the ability or the authority to make it happen the way they think it should be. And if it's wrong, whose fault is it? What about leadership saying, hey, what can we do? What resources do you need? What education? What tools? Sure, somebody's going to go, I need a new computer. I need a new truck. I need whatever. And when we get past all that stuff and get to the adult conversation, we go, well, what could we really do that would drive more money to the bottom line? And that's where I would start is if you don't have a critical number now, if something's not keeping you up at night, what if for the next 90 days or so you said, would I like to make more money than we did last year by the end of this year? So I'm going to ask you, would you like to make more money by the end of this year than you did last year?
Yes.
Wow, you are at a Partridge event. Excellent. The inner circle has spoken. So what if you just set our critical number for now, just till the end of the year, because you're probably in your planning process right now for 2022, but for the end of this year, what if we focus people on hitting something bigger on the profit line, right? How can we affect it? So let me show you an example. I'm so sorry. Before I do that, I want to make sure that you see this. If I teach people business, or I'm sorry, let me put myself back in employee mode. If I learn all this business stuff, and then I come to your stupid huddles and I start forecasting me. And so most people will go to the stake in the outcome and they'll say, well, it's the bonus. How many of you celebrate Christmas with this jewel? Yeah, there you go. I love it. Now, I'm telling you, I know it's old. It came out in 1984. And I do believe any red-blooded American has seen it. Does anyone in this room know what the crux of the movie is? What is the ultimate deep plot point? Yes. He didn't get his Christmas bonus. Yes, go deeper. Huh? He was going to get a pool. What did you say? I still didn't hear you. Oh, family. Yes, absolutely family. But he was digging a hole for a pool he could not afford based on a bonus he didn't even know he might not get. How many Clark W. Griswolds are working in your company right now? We're in mid-October, people. You don't think people are talking about your secret bonus program? How many of you do have a bonus program? So not as many, well, you're not very proud of them, clearly. How many of you have a bonus program you're proud of that's working? Okay, there you go. I like to see that. How many of you would like to see it work better? Okay, so I'm going to give you some tips. I'm not suggesting you change everything right now, but you could do what we did in leadership yesterday is we did what we call mini games. So a miniature version of a game, just a sprint to the end of the year. Teach them the rules of the game, weekly huddle, and stake in the outcome around one simple metric just to move that number by the end of the year. And then plan for yourself, to, if you decide to go this path, to do the big game for the whole company, right? But here's the idea. Try to develop incentive plans that are team-based, because if you create one winner in an organization, what have you really created? A whole entire organization of losers. So, another old movie reference, because I know you love them so very much. Glengarry, Glen Ross? Anybody? Okay, those of you who saw it, help me out here. Alec Baldwin kicks the door into his sales organization, says, "You guys suck. Here's the new sales contest. First prize, Cadillac Eldorado. Second prize, steak knives. Third prize, you're fired." How's that for a sales incentive program? I'm telling you, we do this. We do this all the time. And as leaders and as owners of businesses, we often are so competitive and we believe you got to take the hill and it's got to be, you know, it's dog eat dog out there. What if you actually got everybody together on the same page and said, what can we do to move the number together? So team-based, self-funding, because I don't want any of you to ever pay a bonus or a reward of any kind that hasn't been earned. And finally, gain share. Don't do profit share, because profit share infers that there's break even. If we make a dollar, we share a dollar. You are not investing in your business, your people, yourself. Gain share infers that you start here. What do I need to invest in? Maybe you need to take a draw, whatever it is, but there's a minimum performance. I've talked to a lot of you, and a lot of you guys already do this. You get it. And above that is a gain share. And a gain share will give you freedom. Because now we can talk about it openly. We can say, this is the way it works. I've got to have, and I spoke to someone yesterday that said, I need $190,000 before we pay bonus one. He knew his number. I thought that was really powerful. Do you know your number? What would it look like? Will it change over time? Yes. But can't we teach that? Right now, we need to let people know where they can start to earn what I would call the over, the gain. Because if you perform better than market, I say you deserve better than market. Here's the other thing is Christmas vacation is one thing, but reality is another. Every place I ever worked before I stumbled into SRC 16 years ago had a bonus plan. Usually they were secret and reserved for the ownership, which was all family, and I was never family. Get it? So there was a secret bonus plan, and finally, when I'd worked my way up to the very top, and the only way you could get any higher was to marry someone or someone had to die, and neither were happening fast enough for me, it was like, can I have a little piece of the action? Can I have a little of the bonus? What is it like? The thing is, it was always at the end of the year. What did I do all year long to make it happen? So we actually suggest, I've talked to several of you, some of you do monthly, some of you do quarterly, I love it. Put your reward system as close to the behavior that earned the reward as possible. Put those rewards close to the behavior that earned them, you're reinforcing the behavior. It's B.F. Skinner, right? It's basic behavioral modification. Tell me what to do, show me how to do it, get me the resources I need, and then reward me for doing it. Because you're self-funding and it's a team-based thing, you're going to hit your numbers a lot quicker and a lot easier. Here's another thing I'm going to share with you. There's been a ton of research about happiness. There's a lot of books out there. I know you guys talk about it, but I'm going to give you the secret to happiness right now. Do you want it? There's a lot of sad people in here. Do you want the secret to happiness? I do. I've been looking for this forever, and I found it. University of Michigan researcher did this huge study of all of the data, all of the research, and here's the answer. The number one predictor to happiness is a feeling of agency, of autonomy. It is a feeling of control over your own life. If you don't believe me, go back to when you were 16 years old. You got the keys, and this is the first time you ever took the car out by yourself. Do you remember what you did? Anybody? I do. It was REO Speedwagon, I can tell you that. I mean, I'm telling you, I remember. I was like, windows are down. I'm like, whoa! It was awesome. Freedom, right? What did I do when I graduated from high school? First thing I wanted to do was get out of town. I wanted freedom! The thing is, people don't have control, a feeling of control in their life. What if you could actually give them an opportunity to earn that? I'm not talking about bonuses now. I'm talking about working at a place. They're learning something more. They're learning a universal language. They're talking about building wealth for the first time in their own lives. I'm just like, I'm telling you, this is cool. And so I'm going to show you another video. I think this says it all. This is Sharon. She retired about a year and a half, 2 years ago from SRC. I'll let you tell her story. I'll let her tell her
story. Yeah, I affect the numbers because I can figure out the same. It's like when I bought the shrink wrap. Okay, we shrink wrapped everything, okay? We was paying 20, $2,500 for our shrink wrap. I went to ask about this guy, what can you do for me? He said he could get me the shrink wrap at 18. And I said, okay, you know, and so he gave me a bid sheet on it. Well, I found out that we were getting the same shrink wrap that where we were buying it before, but we were also getting 40 yards more of it. So it ended up being a very big savings, not just money-wise, but it went further for us. So I was happy. I mean, you know, I like doing things like that. I like figuring things out.
And if anyone says whiskers, I will punch you in the throat. High def is not meant for everyone. Sharon, go ahead, what'd you see on her face? A smile, pride, engagement, happiness, ownership. Did she own Shrink Wrap Man? When this story came out, so I was actually, I wasn't behind the camera. I mean, I was asking the questions. Jack had asked us, our stock price went way up one year, and he said, go out there, Baker, get the stories from the people. But nobody talked about the stock price. What they talked about at SRC was what they did to move the numbers. That is so cool because these stories came out like crazy. But she wasn't done talking. I'm like, that's a wrap. This is so cool. I'm done. This job is over. This is so great. I'm inspired. And she goes, no, wait a minute. And this is what happened.
So I came into work one day, and we had our maintenance lady walk up to me with a huge grin on her face. And I said, what are you smiling about? What's going on? She said, I just paid off my house. I said, She said, yeah, I have a five-year plan. SRC every year comes out with a five-year plan. So when I started working here, I started coming out with a five-year plan, and I just paid off my house.
I planned in 5 years to be out of debt. Not only my house is paid for, car's paid for, I owe nobody. And I planned on that. And it was like, okay, how am I going to do this? And they showed me, gave me the tools to be able to do that. I mean, I don't think a lot of people can say they're out of debt.
She smiled at me and said, how many people can say they have no debt right now? And I looked at her, I said, not me. I don't have a five-year plan. I learned something from that day from our maintenance lady to build a plan, just like we do every day inside our organization. You can carry it over to your life.
Is that cool? It is cool. It's moving. Now, you're going to all be sitting there going, okay, I come to these Howard Partridge deals. The inner circle is all about inspiring and everything, but now what the hell do I do? What does this look like? Day one, ground floor, how does this work? And so all I want to do is I'm going to show you one more story. Is that cool? And just tell you about how it works. And yesterday we talked about Kirby Lane Cafe in Austin. I'm going to show you another person from that group because this thing is awesome here. Christian, if you'll take me to the pie. Kirby Lane Cafe is one of the coolest places I've ever been. 7 stores, about 700 people, and they're all so cool, it's disturbing. I mean, really, when you see this video, I just want you to, I'll let Jason tell his story and then we'll dissect it, okay? But look at what I look like. For those of you at home, this is it. And now look at Jason.
My name is Jason. I've been working for Kirby Lane for 5 years. I am an expo for the evening shift. I ended up picking the dessert line because I am directly there at all times and I can kind of oversee it the easiest during my shift. You know, when I took that over and I started implementing a couple changes here and there, I mean, bare minimum, I would probably have saved at least $100 a week. But you multiply that by the 4 weeks in a month, and that's $400. And then you go by a year, and that's $4,800. And then we have 7 stores, and that's a lot of money. And that's just one line that is very small in the big scheme of things. So the recommendations I would have for somebody just starting a line would be, don't be afraid. Think outside of the box. You know, make changes. It's not always going to work out, but the only way to really learn is by making mistakes. You know, I think the Great Game of Business is good because it helps people to really kind of understand just the business that they're in and what's going on. It helps to give them a little more respect for the people that they work with and the company they work for. And I think that getting involved in this can do nothing but help you in every avenue that you try to go down in the future, whether it's owning your own business or, you know, working for another company.
more respect for the company you work for and for the people you work with. This is what he takes away. I think that is transformational. Isn't he cool? I mean, seriously, I told you guys this yesterday. When I first arrived, I'm like this, and like, hey, let's play minigames. And they're like, square. So I'd take him, and I'd take Spoon Man, Matt Jackson, and I would go store to store, and they would teach their system, right? What do you do differently at the expo seat? It's not a seat, obviously, but, you know, he's an expo. So literally, if you don't know what that is, it's between back of house and front of house. So he gets the order. They go, oh, there's a dessert on here. So he gets the dessert, adds the whipped cream, bing, bada, boom, and then he gets it to the server. Out it goes. He's expediting the order. So he says, well, I should take the dessert line. I'm right here every day, all day. That's what I should do. And so he learned the system. By the way, look at where they have their huddle in the video. Their financials are literally on the wall behind curtains in the restaurant. All they do when this huddle is over, they close the curtains, put the tables back, and serve lunch. Isn't that great? And if you zoom in to the dessert cost line, see Jason? He's got two lines. Dessert cost is one of them. And this is how he began. Everybody say this out loud with me. This is our mantra. People support what they help create. We'll do it together here. People support what they help create. Oh, it's magic. Don't you love that? It doesn't matter whether it's the goal we're trying to set, the rewards we want, the mini game we want to play. It's about asking people and respecting them and trusting them to make the right decisions given the right training and information and tools. And this is where he lives. If this is an income statement, this is an exercise we did yesterday. We build it together and we say, hey, what if Jason takes that dessert line? You see where the dessert line is? Well, gosh, at 10 cent profitability, every dollar we can save in desserts is really worth $10 in sales. Do you get it? So let's take it further. Which piece of pie would you rather receive on your table? I like it. This is where I divide the room into two groups and we do Squid Game. So, right? Yeah, I want the bigger one, but it's ugly, it's sloppy. The other one's crisp and clean, and presentation, as you know, is everything. Which one would look better with a slice or a scoop of ice cream and you're paying $8 for it? You get it? It's like, well, the one on the left is also 30% larger. Did you know that there are 8 slices in a pie? I didn't know that. Guess who found it out? Jason, the line item owner. In other words, this line item, well, now I've gone the wrong way. Excuse me. One second here. Get back. Here we go. That line item, dessert cost, he owns it now. He's responsible for it. So he goes out there and he goes, well, first of all, we don't have a standard because we're just cutting a piece of pie, bing, bada, boom. And you know, in the rush of a lunch or dinner rush, bam, 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 things are going, adrenaline's high. You're not cutting them exactly the way they ought to be. What if we pre-portioned them? So he had to work with the executive chef. He had to work with back of house to figure out how far can you chill a pie without ruining the texture and the flavor and the mouthfeel and the umami, they call it. You ever heard that Japanese word? Umami? It's for foodies. It's like the, what does it mean? Good taste and the way it feels in your mouth and it bursts with flavor and all these kinds of things. What I'm trying to get at is, look at all the stuff he's teaching us. He's Jason. A minute ago, I think he was selling crack on... No, he's not. You know what I'm saying? If you walk past Sharon on the sidewalk, do you think she's a millionaire? Probably not. What I'm saying is, Jason is a business guy now. He's running that part of the business. And so, when we look at that pie and we go, this is just one thing that he instituted and created a process, which then he could teach to the other 6 stores. Now he's like, dude, I'm the pie guy. It's pretty cool, right? Pride, all of this respect he talked about and everything else. If we would have said, you need to cut 8 pieces out of that pie, who do we sound like? The cold-hearted capitalist that people think you are. Instead, so this is the mini game template, and it's something that I will share with all of you through the inner circle. We used it yesterday during our workshop. The idea is that there's 10 things, 10 steps to it. Don't worry about it. Don't even try to take a picture of it. This is what his looked like. My point is this, because we only have a minute or two left, and I want to make sure. All right, I'll go back. Take a quick one. Did I go the wrong way? Damn it. There you go. Here's the point. He says, we have a problem. It's called shrink. You guys know what that is, right? What happens to pie when it's not going in someone's mouth? It's going on the floor. It's messed up. It gets stolen. It gets eaten. Or maybe it gets comped. These are all things they discovered, right? Because they had to ask, what is shrink? Because if you asked them before we started teaching them business, they would have said, oh, I saw that Seinfeld episode. See? So here's the deal. What is shrink? How do we affect it? Do we have to be perfect? No. Let's just move it from 75% yield of all of our desserts, not just pies, but ice cream, cakes, all the different ways that they have desserts, sopapilla. Let's go from 75% yield to 95%. Why not 100%? Nobody's perfect. And then finally, this is what it looks like. So you heard him say, and look at what they wanted for rewards. Could we all wear the same t-shirt on Thursdays? So at 30 days of setting that standard and sticking to it, they got a t-shirt. I'm like, sure, you way overpaid for this deal. What do you want for the next level? Well, the medium prize, we want a slice of pie and a scoop of ice cream of our choice. I'm like, sure. I mean, you're obviously self-funding this thing. And finally, what do you want? What if we could take a pie or cake home to our family and friends? I'm like, fantastic. Simple stuff, right? Non-monetary, but definitely themed around this whole thing. We want a slice of the pie. That was their theme for 90 days. Look at their scoreboard. It's a pie with numbers on it, and they're talking about their weekly yield. And you look how it changed from 85, 86, 85. You notice they're not even in the 70s because just paying attention to a number changes the number. All of a sudden, you got somebody who's really going, this is cool. I could get behind this. And now I'm a little more important because the company trusts me to go teach the other stores what's happening. And finally, when you think about his impact, remember our little income statement here, and you go dessert line, and every dollar he saves is worth 10 in sales? Do the math that he gave you. He said $100 a week, and then he said there's 12 months in the year, 7 stores is 33 grand. Here's the thing. He's counting 48 weeks. Can we all learn every day? There's 52 weeks that they're open. So look at that, $100 a week, 52 weeks, 7 stores, 36 grand and change, and at 10 cent profitability, it means Kirby Lane Cafe would have had to sell $364,000 in pancakes to offset the dessert loss. Is that powerful? Here's the point. They didn't just do that. The first mini game they played was on non-alcoholic soft drinks, 40 grand in the first 90 days. They did it on paper goods. They saved 55 gallons of homemade salsa a week. That's how big 55 gallons is. Spoons. You guys saw the video yesterday of Spoon Man. Couple hundred thousand dollars of impact. Net promoter score. Customer satisfaction. Why not do a mini game on that? And finally, $1,000 a week in bacon. So everybody can be participating in this idea. And here's the big deal, right? Is in 1 year, they had $2.3 million worth of impact. You know what their plan to grow that year was? $1 million. The impact was actually double what the owner wanted just by involving his people. And I'm telling you, they're really just getting started, and that was several years ago, because there's just more you can learn about business. Here's the question to end it with. Can your people do it? If I can learn it, if Jason can learn it, if Sharon can learn it, can your people learn this? Can they learn it? Do you believe? All right, I'm telling you, man, it will free you. Howard, if I think, I heard him say, the truth will set you free, but it'll piss you off first. Is that right? Let it set you free, but be smart about it. There's lots of help for you, and I'll leave you with this thought. If we, in fact, could involve each department in just figuring out one little way by the end of the year to improve our profitability, wouldn't it be cool? Because for this year, it's profitability. What if next year we're trying to figure out ways to diversify? What if we're trying to figure out ways to reduce our debt? What if we got all these other things going on that we got to deal with? It's not just about cutting costs. That's not the point. That's just a quick way to connect people to the income statement. teach them something, then teach them something else, and never stop teaching, because we know one thing for sure. If you get everybody involved, what will happen is, we have a phrase around SRC and the Great Game of Business community worldwide, and that is, it's Jack Sack's higher law of business number two. It's pretty easy to stop one guy. It's pretty hard to stop 100. And at SRC, it's pretty hard to stop 2,000. So I hope you will take something out of this and teach your people a little bit about the Great Game of Business. Thank you very much. Thanks.